Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. Last Friday, top Vatican official Cardinal Francis Arinze said that Catholic politicians who support abortion rights are not fit to receive the sacrament of communion. While he didn't mention John Kerry by name, it was clear that the Catholic challenger for the White House matched Arinze's description. Tonight on Point, American politics, abortion, and the Catholic Church. But first, we begin in Fallujah, where U.S. warplanes today delivered a thunderous show of force, bombarding insurgent forces after U.S. troops had earlier killed scores of Iraqi fighters to the south near Najaf. Scott Peterson is a reporter with the Christian Science Monitor, embedded with the U.S. Marines at what they call Fort Fallujah, 6 miles east of the city. I asked him for the latest on the fighting in Fallujah.
In the last couple of hours, there's been quite a heavy firefight with Marines pounding positions to the northwest of the city, basically using aircraft, using AC-130 Spectre gunships to pound very, very specific targets. And remember that this is coming hot on the heels of a very large and, I think, a surprise to the Marine command here attack by the insurgents yesterday. I spoke to some of the soldiers who were involved in that attack. They said that between 50 and 150 insurgents took part in that attack, that it was extremely well coordinated, and that they were surprised at its ferocity.
So this was yesterday, the attack around the mosque, and tonight we were talking about American bombardment of a site outside of Fallujah or within the city, Scott?
Well, I think that most of the targets have been, in the last couple of weeks, and they've identified these for a while now, are elements within the industrial section of the city. There are not so many civilians who are there at the moment, so in that respect it's kind of no man's land, but it's also a place where the Marines have been receiving a lot of fire every single day from the insurgents, and I think that they finally decided that they were going to get back very specifically at certain places that they would have identified. If you're going to use a Spectre gunship, which often fires from as high as 14,000 feet, this is how we saw it work in Somalia in 1993, for example, then you really need to have very, very precise locations on the ground, and in order to be effective, that's probably what they've got.
Scott, at this point in Fallujah, what's your sense of the deployment of the Marines? Are they all over the city in certain points, mainly on the outskirts? And what's the deployment of the resistance in Fallujah?
The resistance is moving around the city at will, as far as anyone can tell. And the cordon still exists also. The Marine cordon of the city still exists too, also as far as we know. There have been movements forward by the Marines when they felt that they needed to occupy something from which they had been returning fire. This is what happened yesterday. The Marines moved forward by about 300 yards. That provoked this attack by the insurgents because they were really very, very far out. And when I talk about a coordinated response by the insurgents, they attacked forward. They also moved very decidedly to get around the Marine position and basically cut off the rear supply line. So I think all this kind of took the Marines by surprise and basically really made them wonder or question their assumptions about how well organized and regrouped the insurgents may have become while they've taken advantage of this ceasefire.
American officials have been warning for days that if they didn't have some kind of agreement or satisfaction from the insurgents in Fallujah, that they would move decisively on the town, on the city. Could this bombing this evening be the beginning of a general offensive to take Fallujah, or are they still hoping to avoid that?
They sounded like they were still hoping to avoid that. So it is not clear what this is the beginning of or not. I don't think that this is the beginning of the recapture of the city entirely per se, because at the moment there's still an agreement, quote-unquote, on the ground. I mean, today there were supposed to be joint Marine and police patrols that were starting. That has slipped, we are told, more for logistical reasons than anything else. That has slipped until at least Thursday or Friday, but at least it's still on the table. There are still things that were meant to take place in the coming days, so I would be surprised if this would be really the sharp edge of the entire offensive, because I think that basically the high command here has not yet decided whether or not to pursue that offensive. I think they're looking at all the information. The information is changing every day, and I think it makes them change their mind every day about whether or not to go in and occupy the city completely.
But this heavy American attack in Fallujah comes on the heels of the heavy bombing in Kufa near Najaf yesterday. So they are stepping up the ferocity of the American response.
Well, that is absolutely correct. And, of course, when we saw this Najaf attack yesterday and overnight, we thought, well, that means that basically the U.S. focus is now going to be on Najaf and dealing with the Shia. Of course, just 2 or 3 days before that, we'd been assured, no, no, nothing's going to happen in Najaf until the Fallujah situation was sorted out. So I think it really is too fluid, in fact, to even kind of connect the dots sometimes. And I think in part because I think those that are calling the shots also are having trouble connecting all the dots and trying to work it all out.
Scott, from your conversations with soldiers there, how tough was the firefight yesterday that was more organized than they expected it? What's their level of confidence that they can deal with this insurgency in Fallujah?
On a military level, they are certain that they can deal with it. The question is, what will the fallout be if they deal with it in a purely military way? Certainly the soldiers that I've spoken to who were engaged in yesterday's firefight, they were certainly surprised in the sense that they were surprised at the numbers of insurgents there were and how well organized they were. They certainly feel like they took out a fair number of them. I think the figure is 8 or so. But they said that they came in groups of 4 or 2. You know, they have all the advantages, the guerrillas. They know the territory. They know how to move around. They also now have been watching the Marines for several weeks, so they also have a much more refined understanding of Marine tactics on the ground and also then have a much better idea about where weaknesses are. And it seems that they may be beginning to exploit those more than they have been in the past.
And finally, Scott, we're getting these high numbers of Iraqi or resistance deaths reported by the military now. When those are they reported with a sense of accomplishment, as though killing, you know, several dozen means a real setback to the rebels?
Well, that really depends on how you add up the rebel numbers. We've been being told all kinds of numbers, especially last week we were told by the very top Marine sources here that they estimated 200 kind of hardcore foreign fighters and then some 2,000 other Iraqi fighters. The numbers simply don't add up. I mean, the fighting that we saw earlier in April, in which we know that there were an estimated 500 or 600 Iraqis killed at least. Now, the Marines say that the vast majority of those were actually insurgents. But it seems that if those were killed, plus all the others, that would mean that the insurgency is actually a lot larger than they've actually admitted. So I think that these numbers are really not clear. Certainly there was a larger mix of civilians in the death toll than the Marines have owned up to, basically.
And Scott, you're there with the Marines, embedded with the troops. How's morale?
Well, it's been surprisingly good. I mean, let us keep in mind that they've only been here for about a month and a half. Most of them took part in the fighting a year ago during the invasion. They were here for several months then. They went home for a few months, and now they're back. What I hear from them again and again, and even from guys who are wounded, they say they're raring to go back out.
Scott Peterson, thanks so much for joining us. Be safe.
Sure, thank you.
Scott Peterson is a reporter with the Christian Science Monitor, embedded with U.S. Marines on the outskirts of Fallujah in Iraq. In September 1960, in the midst of his run for the presidency, Senator John F. Kennedy addressed a group of Protestant ministers in Houston, Texas. He spoke about being a Catholic aiming for the White House.
I am not the Catholic candidate for president. I am the Democratic Party's candidate for president, who happens also to be a Catholic. I do not speak for my church on public matters, and the church does not speak for me.
44 years later, Catholic presidential hopeful John Kerry is making similar pronouncements as his divergence from church doctrine on issues such as abortion and embryonic stem cell research draws fire from conservative Catholics and elements of the Catholic hierarchy. Like Kennedy, Kerry stands on the separation of church and state. His critics counter that Catholic politicians must promote church teachings in public life. This is tricky territory in American politics, territory opened not least by sitting President George W. Bush with his frequent references to religious guidance. So what's going on here? What responsibility do American Catholic political leaders have to Roman Catholic teachings in their public capacity? Can John Kerry be both pro-choice and a Catholic in good standing? Does it matter to his run for the presidency? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining us now from Kensington, Maryland, is Joe Fireherd, Washington correspondent for the National Catholic Reporter. Good evening and welcome, Joe.
Good evening.
Thanks for being with us. Also with us from Cleveland, Ohio, is Patrick Healy, a staff writer for the Boston Globe covering the Kerry campaign. Good evening and welcome, Pat Healy.
Good evening.
Thanks for being with us. And with us from Hanover, New Hampshire, On Point News analyst Jack Beattie, senior editor at the Atlantic Monthly. Hello, Jack.
Hello, Tom. Hello to our guests.
Joe Fireheard, first to you, what has brought all this on? Suddenly, in the last month, we've seen a lot of stories about the Catholic Church and candidate Kerry, not to mention other American politicians. What's happening here?
Well, I think there's two things. There's an immediate cause, the fact that Senator Kerry is the first Catholic major party nominee since President Kennedy is certainly a factor. The fact that he takes positions that are counter to church teaching on issues of abortion specifically is another factor. There's also a long-term issue here. There's some frustration on the part of those, particularly those who oppose abortion, that 30 years after Roe v. Wade, they're have not made substantial progress in rolling that back.
Give us, then, a kind of x-ray of the Catholic Church hierarchy and maybe the lay side as well, to the extent that you can. How deep is the resistance to an American presidential contender who's not lining up with the Vatican position on abortion, for example? How widespread? We've heard this call for communion to be refused to politicians who don't toe the line there. How widespread is that call?
Well, as you said, Tom, in your introduction, this is very tricky territory. It is not very widespread in the American church. There's one bishop, the Archbishop of St. Louis, Bishop Burke, who has declared that he would not provide communion to Senator Kennedy if he presented himself for communion there, and has, in his previous post in La Crosse, Wisconsin, told the Catholic pro-choice legislators not to come to communion. No other bishops have made that statement. The cardinals in the United States, Cardinal McCarrick, Cardinal George in Chicago, and others have indicated that they would prefer a less contentious way of getting their point across than denying communion to a pro-choice politician. Of course, the Vatican made a statement last Friday, which certainly gave impetus to those who would like to see Catholic pro-choice politicians punished for their views in the church by denying them communion. But it's unclear at this point whether that'll take root and be a widespread practice or not.
There have been a few other voices, the Archbishop in Denver writing that good Catholics should not vote for politicians who support abortion rights. What about Archbishop O'Malley in Boston, Kerry's hometown?
Archbishop O'Malley has indicated that he would prefer that the politicians who have a different position than the church on this issue should take it upon themselves not to present themselves for communion, but he has said that he will not be denying communion or not instruct his priest to deny communion to those who present themselves.
Patrick Healy, how is all this being received in John Kerry's presidential campaign? This is probably the last thing that they want to deal with, and it does seem kind of like an antique of American politics, but here it is.
Yeah, well, there are a lot of things that are sort of the last thing they'd want to deal with. So right now they're in the middle of this Vietnam medal situation, and the Catholic Church controversy seems, you know, suddenly a little bit old. But it is a difficult, it's tricky for them. John Kerry says that he personally opposes abortion, but he is strongly pro-choice. He favors abortion rights. He sees a distinction there. And the bright line that he draws is between his personal religious beliefs as a Catholic, as someone who was an altar boy when he was young, who has said that he briefly considered possibly becoming a priest, as someone who still goes to church, you know, fairly regularly, attempts to try to go once a week. A difference between that and then his public life, where he believes that religion, no matter what religion you are, should have nothing to do with legislating as a senator or congressman, should have nothing to do with decisions as a president, should have nothing to do with rulings by the U.S. Supreme Court or judges on the bench. So they see a real distinction here, but it is a tricky issue and one that is sort of viscerally important for some voters. So they're sort of trying to navigate it.
and horning in on a campaign in 2004, 40-plus years after JFK drew that bright line between church and state. Joe Fireherd, Pat Healy, Jack Beattie, please stand by. We have to take a short break. We're talking tonight about the Catholic Church and pressure on American politicians to toe the Vatican line. You can join the conversation tonight. What responsibility do American Catholic politicians have to Roman Catholic teachings in their public capacity? Can American Catholics be both obedient to the church and successful in American politics? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about tension between Roman Catholic teachings and Catholic politicians of the pro-choice variety, particularly, especially in this year, John Kerry. You can join the conversation tonight. Can John Kerry be both pro-choice and a Catholic in good standing? Should the church deny Kerry communion, as some have suggested, if he doesn't yield on abortion? And is John Kerry under any more pressure from his church than George Bush is from American evangelicals? Is the church-state line breaking down here or not? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm joined tonight by Joe Fireherd. He is Washington correspondent for the National Catholic Reporter. Patrick Healy, Boston Globe reporter covering the Kerry campaign, and our own Jack Beattie. Jack, it does feel remarkable all these decades after JFK, as in Kennedy, to be debating this in the months running up to a presidential election.
It does. And, you know, let's put it in some perspective, the perspective really of the church in America. You know, there have been two dominant tropes of anti-Catholic bigotry here. One is symbolized by a pamphlet put out in 1928 by the Hoover campaign, or people associated with it, that depicted a tunnel. Actually, it was actually the Holland Tunnel. Mm. And then they handed it out in rural areas. And underneath it said, Al Smith's Tunnel Secret. Tunnel to the Vatican. That was one of the tropes. You do the bidding of the Vatican. But the other, and this brings us to where we are today, into the church's situation, was lascivious priests. That's been a staple of anti-Catholic bigotry since the burning of and religious people since the burning of the Ursuline Convent in 1837. So here we are. We've got this institution that has shed so much of its moral authority just in the past 2 years because of this child sex abuse scandal. So here they're telling Kerry, you're not fit. You're not fit to receive the sacrament because you support the law of the land. While for generations, the hierarchy was giving that sacrament to people it knew were breaking the law. This is an institution. This is not your father's Catholic Church. It does not have the old moral authority.
Joe Fireherd, where is the fire being trained here? Is this all about abortion? What about the other issues that are important to the Catholic Church, issues, social justice issues, issues around the death penalty, even the war in Iraq, which the Pope has spoken out against? Are those being brought onto the table here as well or not?
Well, it's a good question. There are folks who would like to see them brought on the table. There's a group of House Democrats in Washington who are both pro-life, pro-choice, but they're Democrats, and they're trying to get some attention to the range of issues which they say the church should be paying attention to in the political realm, whether it's economic justice and immigration, housing, the range of issues that the church cares about also. They feel that that the church is either the church has been portrayed or is actually focused exclusively on abortion to its detriment.
And what's your sense of how pragmatic the American bishops are ultimately? Do you think that they will continue to raise these questions, this dynamic, as John Kerry heads toward the election to the extent that it might actually harm his candidacy?
Well, the American bishops are not a monolith. There are almost 200 dioceses in this country, and they act as separate fiefdoms, essentially. So individual bishops will do what individual bishops do. As a general rule, the bishops are pragmatic, and they are concerned To Jack's point about their own credibility, they are concerned that if they are perceived as being harsh on Senator Kerry, that in fact it'll blow back against them and have a beneficial effect on him, or at least not have the effect that they intend.
And Patrick Healey, in the 2000 election, Catholics were voted roughly 50-50 for Governor Bush and Vice President Gore. Does John Kerry anticipate particular trouble with the Catholic constituency or not here?
Well, he certainly hopes not. I mean, he certainly hopes that the argument that he's putting forward, invoking President Kennedy's speech, certainly down in Texas, that sort of identification that while he is Catholic, that is part of who he is, as much as having served in the Vietnam War, having been in the Senate for 19 years, that these all speak to who he is as a person, the kind of choices that he makes, that still they should accept him on his record and not worry, you know, to some extent about him coming in and legislating with any kind of Catholic doctrine in mind. I think that they're hoping that will sort of convince people whether he's going to drive people away because he is such an ardent supporter of abortion rights, you know, is something that the campaign, you know, realizes they're going to have to deal with, and they sort of try to square by saying that on a personal level and on a faith level, he feels one way about abortion, but he feels that this is a woman's fundamental right and a right of privacy that he sees in the Constitution.
To the point that he has said he would not nominate a Supreme Court justice nominee who did not support that right. Patrick Healey in Cleveland, Ohio tonight with the Kerry campaign for the Boston Globe. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
And Joe Fireherd in Maryland, Washington correspondent for the National Catholic Reporter. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
I want to welcome to our conversation now from South Bend, Indiana, Father Richard McBrien. He's professor of theology at the University of Notre Dame. Good evening and welcome, Father McBrien.
Hi, Tom. Glad to be with you.
It's good to have you back. And with us tonight from New York, Father Richard John Newhouse. He's a priest in the Archdiocese of New York and editor-in-chief of First Things, a monthly journal of religion, culture, and public life. Good evening and welcome. Welcome back, Father Richard John Newhouse. Great to have you both. Mm-hmm. Richard John Newhouse, if I may go first to you, how do you see this issue? You've got a reputation as a conservative in the Catholic realm. Is the Church right? Well, first of all, do you see a fresh or new concerted campaign to try and bring American political leaders in line with Catholic Church teachings, particularly when it comes to abortion?
Well, we'd have to specify Catholic political leaders, of course. This is an extraordinary, to say the obvious, complicated thing, and it's particularly complicated because we're in a election year, presidential election year, and therefore it's going to be very, very difficult for the bishops, and it finally is up to the bishops as to how this is going to be handled. It's going to be very difficult to distinguish within the Church and in the public eye what it is precisely that the Church is saying and doing, so that it doesn't become entangled with the partisan political struggle. I mean, the Church's concern has to be several. I mean, it has to be a concern for the spiritual well-being of the public figure in question. Mm-hmm. It has to be a concern for presenting the Church's teaching clearly and without compromise. It has to be a concern for the many of the faithful Catholics who are scandalized by what seems to be the overt and purposeful and obstinate rejection of Church teaching without the Church saying anything about it.
And not only by John Kerry, there's some maybe 70 congressmen who have Catholic congressmen with pro-abortion voting records.
Of course. Many, many. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's certainly not just about John Kerry. So that you got a real muddle here, and it's complicated further by the fact that up till now, the bishops have avoided, or some would say evaded, doing their duty in terms of clarifying Catholic teaching in a public way and calling Catholics to account. And to do it now, in the context of an election year, is going to be, as I say, an exceedingly delicate process. But the bishops have no choice, really, but to do their duty by spiritual care for the person involved, clarifying public teaching, making very clear that the scandal is addressed and that the Catholic people see that indeed one cannot, without impairing one's communion with the church, openly, publicly, persistently, and obstinately defy the church's teaching. And I think in the case of many of these politicians, that's what you have. I mean, you do not have the kind of thing we had with Mario Cuomo, the former governor of New York, back in 1984, where he tried, and there are different judgments as to what success he had in doing this, but where he tried to square the circle, so to speak, and to make the case that he could, in fidelity to Catholic teaching, nonetheless take the position he did with regard to abortion. In the case of John Kerry and of many others now, there seems to be a very clear, explicit, and unequivocal rejection of the church's teaching, namely to say that abortion is a right, except in the narrow technical sense of a constitutional ruling, Roe v. Wade, is to clearly reject the unequivocal teaching of the church that there is a moral obligation to protect the innocent human life, including the life of the unborn child.
And let me ask you, just to get you on the record here, John Kerry did take communion on Easter at the Paulist Center in Boston. Mm-hmm. The priest there said that he had been inundated with calls demanding that he refuse to give communion to John Kerry, but the communion was given. What's your position on that? Should communion be denied, as Cardinal Arinze suggested at the Vatican on Friday, to political leaders who take the position you're describing?
Well, Cardinal Arinze's position actually was considerably more nuanced than I think most of the media reported it as being. He said that if, according to church teaching, one is not fit, that is to say, in a state of grace, to receive the sacraments, then the sacraments should not be given. One should not present oneself to receive Holy Communion, and if the circumstance is known to the priest involved or to the person who's distributing communion, then the sacrament should not be given. There are a number of difficult nuances in there, but you see, precisely the problem we have is illustrated by the instance you raise, where everything is concentrated on John Kerry as a presidential candidate, and whether, in fact, the bishops will act in a concerted way to rectify what your previous guest referred to as the settlement of 1960 in Houston with the first JFK.
All nuance considered, do you think that John Kerry should be given communion, given his stance on abortion rights?
Well, his bishop, as I understand it, is Archbishop O'Malley of Boston. That's a decision that Archbishop O'Malley will have to make. I think one could make a case that given the inevitable politicizing of this in a partisan way, and given the traumatic experience of the last few years that the church in Boston most particularly has been through, let me put it very carefully, I could understand, and I think that canon law would accommodate a decision by Archbishop O'Malley not to force that question, whether with regard to John Kerry or with regard to Senator Kennedy or a host of other Catholics in his archdiocese who would seem to be in a similar circumstance.
To let that one ride, at least for now. Father Richard McBrien, how do you interpret what's going on here, flurry of insistence on U.S. American Catholic political leaders following in their public life Catholic Church teachings?
Well, by the way, my friend Father Newhouse may be surprised that I agree with many things that he said, although I'm not quite sure what doing their duty would mean. If it does or does not mean denying Senator Kerry and others communion, I think that would be a mistake, and I don't think the bishops will do that. But your question has to do with what again, Tom?
Well, just what do you make of this apparent, I mean, to someone looking on here, that looks like an upsurge in insistence or assertiveness on the part of some Catholic bishops. Last Friday, it seemed the Vatican itself, in the person of Cardinal Arinze, more forcefully saying American or Catholic political leaders need to get in line with church teaching.
Well, look, Cardinal Arinze is the head of a congregation which has to do with liturgy. And
we should point out, by the way, he's a Nigerian, often cited as possible successor to the Pope.
I guarantee you.
Okay.
You can come back to me and said, Father McBrien, you were totally wrong.
All right.
You can put money on it. It's a slam dunk. He'll never be elected Pope.
Nevertheless, very prominent.
Okay. But he's head of the Congregation for Liturgy and has many liturgical scholars very upset with him and the way he's handling this job. But that's beside the point. The press conference he held was on the occasion of releasing some new regulations, disciplinary decrees regarding the celebration of the Mass, of the Eucharist. And it was in that press conference that he was asked a question about the situation in the United States.
Right.
Cardinal Arinze would have been wise simply to defer it and say, look, that's a matter – and he did say this in the context of the whole reply. But he should have just said, look, that is a matter for the American bishops to deal with.
Which he did go on to say in fairness. He said the Catholic Church exists in the United States and there are bishops there. Let them interpret it.
Yes, he did, I concede that. But the – and I think Father Newhouse is right. I think the – many in the media, but more importantly, many of the most militant in the pro-life movement, the Catholic pro-life movement, interpreted that as being an endorsement of their view that Senator Kerry and other liberal Democrats and moderate Republicans should be denied communion. And Arinze, you know, that may be his personal opinion, but I think he stopped at the water's edge of involving himself in American politics at this very delicate time. Again, I agree with Father Newhouse that it's a very complex issue, and the fact that this discussion is going on in the teeth of a national presidential election makes it very delicate indeed. And that's why, if you want another prediction, Arinze will never be elected pope. I'll give you another prediction. The bishops will not issue a national policy on this matter regarding the denial or of communion to Senator Kerry and any other Catholic politician whom they believe is voting in the wrong way.
They'll never issue it or won't issue it before November 3rd.
Yeah. We'll never issue it before the election.
Mm-hmm. Well, perhaps Father McBrien would stretch himself and agree with me a little even further, and that is that the bishops' first responsibility is to be bishops. That is, they should, the political calculation they have to the best of their ability to try to eliminate from what it is that their responsibility is to do. They are, first of all, teachers, and they are to make sure that the teaching of the church is not compromised. And then they are pastors who are to care for the souls of these public figures, and they have a responsibility to engage them pastorally.
Does that jibe with what John Kennedy said four decades ago?
No, I think not. John, it's four decades ago, there was such an eagerness, and an understandable eagerness, I don't say this critically, it is perfectly understandable, within the Catholic community, and such a pride in having a Catholic candidate and the prospect of a Catholic president, that when John Kennedy said what he did in Houston, which in my judgment was not in accord with Catholic teaching. No way could it be brought into accord with Catholic teaching.
And yet it was celebrated in American life, in American political life.
Well, yes, in American political life, because it seemed to say that to confirm the liberal prejudice that, of course, religion is a perfectly private thing that has nothing to do with public life, that must be carefully sealed off from the public square. And in effect, John F. Kennedy announced that his Catholicism would simply have no bearing on the kinds of moral and political judgments he would make as a president.
He said, the church does not speak for me.
Well, yeah, but he went farther than that. And a lot of bishops at the time and theologians bit their tongue. Now, some of them did speak out and say, hey, just a minute, he went much too far here.
Father Richard John Newhouse, Father Richard McBrien, Jack Beattie, please stand by. We have to take a short break. We'll be right back. We're talking about the Catholic Church and American politics, abortion, John Kerry. You can join the conversation. Can you believe we're having this conversation 44 years after John F. Kennedy's run for the White House? If President Bush consults his higher father, should John Kerry listen to the bishops? Or should a line be drawn here? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about American politics and the Catholic Church in a year when a new JFK, John F. Kerry, is running for the presidency. My guest tonight, Father Richard John Newhouse, joins us from New York. He's editor-in-chief of First Things. From South Bend, Indiana, we're joined by Father Richard McBrien, professor of theology at the University of Notre Dame. Jack Beattie is with us. You can join us as well. What responsibility do American Catholic politicians have to Roman Catholic teachings in their public capacity. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Dan is calling from Wayland, Massachusetts. Hi, Dan. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
I'd like to just put this in the context of from the Catholic side, not the political side, that the church is full of people who in some ways are selective about what they believe from the bishops on all kinds of matters, not just abortion, contraception, women's ordination, and
famously
we're all sticking with it and think it's our church too. If the bishops excluded everyone who disagreed with them, the churches would be empty.
So how does that figure in then, Dan, when the target of conversation is a political leader?
I happen to like Kerry, but in some ways I think it puts him in good standing with many other Catholics on all kinds of issues. I mean, I think that his fellow Catholics will see this, that he's sticking with the church, even though there's some things he's got problems with.
Yeah, we've got it. Dan, thanks for raising that. Father Richard McBride, how about it? Dan suggesting that if the same position was taken with all Catholics, a lot of people wouldn't be taking communion.
Well, you see, that is another problem here, and we haven't approached it until the call. Mm. Is that there are a lot of other official teachings of the church which aren't being used as litmus tests. Abortion is a very important issue, but it does not trump all other issues. There is a social teaching of the church on social justice, human rights, and peace. Pope John Paul II was emphatic in morally condemning the very idea of a preemptive war in Iraq, and yet many Catholics who are 100% with the Vatican on not only on the abortion issue, but on all its political ramifications, went into a pretzel posture to somehow figure out how they could remain loyal to Pope John Paul II and nonetheless be still seen, nonetheless still follow their own political judgments about the necessity of going to war and remove Saddam Hussein. And so there are all these questions. I mean, sometimes people pull up capital punishment as if there's an equivalency between abortion and capital punishment. I don't think there's an exact equivalency, but nonetheless, it does make the point that there are other life issues on which the church, and in this case Pope John Paul II, have been explicit and emphatic.
But let me ask you then, if I may, what do you think is going on here? Is the Catholic Church trying to, by what looks like, putting more pressure on political leaders who are more visible, are they through that means trying to get a message of greater assertion of authority over Catholics generally?
The assumption you're making is that the Catholic Church is somehow officially involved in this whole thing. If John Kerry were not the presumptive nominee of the Democratic Party, if they had nominated even a moderate Democrat like Joe Lieberman or someone like that, those who are making the most noise about this whole issue would still have voted for the reelection of George Bush. There's no difference is going to be made in who votes for whom over this issue.
You're saying it's essentially political conservatives driving it?
Yes. This is a godsend for people who are in favor of the reelection of George Bush, and they have every right to be in favor of George Bush's reelection. But it's a godsend because if the Democrats were not about to nominate a liberal Democrat who also happens to be a Catholic, the abortion issue would never hit the radar screen.
Look,
let me finish. Tim Russert had a one-hour interview with Senator Kerry just the other night.
Yeah.
The entire interview, the Catholic Church and abortion were not even mentioned. George Bush has made it very clear already that he does not want his party, even Tom DeLay agreed with him, he does not want his party to make any effort to work for a constitutional amendment to ban abortion. And that's been an historic pledge of the Republican Party for a number of years now, because he knows that it wouldn't sell. So they look for incremental gains, and of course others get disturbed by that. But the abortion issue is an effective tool on the part of political partisans to keep the discussion in this campaign off of the economy and Iraq. Anything they can do to put Kerry on the defensive, whether it's about throwing away his medals and ribbons or whether it's his votes on abortion and his difficulties with the Catholic Church, has a very definite political benefit to the other party. Namely, it keeps the discussion, it keeps Kerry in a defensive posture and the discussion off the economy and Iraq.
Yeah, we hear you there. Richard John Newhouse, how about it? Is this whole thing just a political tool of political conservatives?
Of course not. I mean, are there conservatives and supporters of George W. Bush who would use this for partisan advantage, of course. So what else is new? We're talking about partisan politics. But I thought the subject was not partisan politics, but how the Catholic Church, and especially the bishops, have to cope with a very, very difficult set of circumstances. And what your caller mentioned is, of course, the case. There are many Catholics, sometimes pejoratively called cafeteria Catholics, who are selective with regard to church teaching. He used an interesting phrase, though. He said, people who have problems with contraception or problems with X, Y, or Z. Mm. That's very different from having a problem than to stand in open defiance of the church's teaching. Cardinal Newman said, 1,000 difficulties do not add up to a doubt. That is, do not add up to a rejection of a teaching. The Catholic Church, and any educated Catholic knows this, believes that there is a magisterial authority of the Pope with the bishops, guided by the Holy Spirit in teaching the revealed truth of God. And while Father McBrien earlier was saying we perhaps had agreements in some things, and I'm sure we do, on this we have the sharpest disagreement, that the other issues, whether it be what's referred to as peace and justice or capital punishment and so forth, in no way, within that understanding of Catholic teaching, have the normative status that the teaching with regard to the taking of innocent human life in the case of abortion and euthanasia has. That is a emphatically taught with the full authority of the church as a matter that is grounded in the deposit of faith, as we say, in the revealed truth of God in Jesus Christ.
So a more fundamental level of teaching. Jack Beattie, I want to bring you in here. There's a fascinating kind of a evolutionary arc being described here, where in 1960, Catholics were so pleased to be potentially surmounting that anti-Catholic bigotry you cited that they were prepared to support John Kennedy, even when he drew this bright line. Now I'm hearing the conversation, the idea that somehow the American polity is on the other side of that line. We can now open the door again to a religious involvement in political thinking, in national policy making, and it's okay. Certainly President Bush has fairly explicitly done so. Jack.
Yes, but you know, he's in a different position. There is no fundamentalist church. There is no Vatican. Now, let's put it another way. It's an American institution. It's the overhang of the Vatican, of Italy, of the foreign power on American Catholics that's been the historical canard against them. And that's the thing that this, in a way, I think this sort of thing from the Vatican and the bishops could actually help Kerry among that fraction of fundamentalist Protestants who still believe in Al Smith's tunnel. But you know, Governor Cuomo really did speak to this in a lecture at, Father Newhouse alluded to it, at Notre Dame in 1964. 84. He said this.
84,
he said
that, yeah.
84. Right. He said this, the Catholic who holds political office in a pluralistic democracy bears special responsibility. He or she undertakes to help create conditions under which all Catholics, Protestants, Jews, Muslims, atheists can live with dignity, where the laws protect people's right to divorce, use birth control, and even to choose abortion. This is a pluralistic society. So for a Catholic to say, I'm going to breach that wall and make the church's teaching central to what I do in politics, well, that's saying to all these other denominations, we're going to force our line on you.
Except, Mr. Beattie, perhaps you would agree that one of the ironies of the circumstance now is that, and very different from 1960, and it's rather, it has its humorous aspect to it, is that then the people you're talking about, the fundamentalists and others who had a profoundly deep anti-Catholic streak, that they were the ones who had to be reassured by John F. Kennedy that, you know, he was not going to act as a Catholic in the White House, whereas today it's precisely the same people, with a few exceptions, who are very eager to see the Catholic bishops require of John Kerry and others that they conform their public position to their to the church's teaching.
And that is where I wonder if that line between church and state is becoming a dotted line in part. Steve is calling from Oshkosh, Wisconsin. Hi, Steve. You're on the air.
Good evening, and thanks. I wonder if I could bring up this notion of the seamless garment of life. I'm a Catholic from Wisconsin, where Bishop Burke got this movement off the ground to writing letters to Wisconsin legislators and you could see the writing on the wall that John Kerry was next in the gun sights of conservatives.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to me that the Pope has been very clear about the potential perils of capitalism unbridled. He called the Iraq War a defeat for humanity, and he's been pretty clear about abortion. And it seems to me to pluck one plank out of a pro-life stance is hypocrisy, which is sort of the last thing the Catholic Church needs right now.
So how do you think that should interpret into America's political life, into this debate tonight, Steve?
Well, I think those bringing it and making political fodder of this issue are political opportunists and not pro-life or not the agents of humanity. It reeks of hypocrisy, and I would like to see the Church, like the Vatican emissary who commented on this issue, take a higher stand. That is to say, if we follow the Holy Father's teachings and share equally and distribute equally and never make war and take away every reason for an abortion through a good social safety net, that's the real pro-life stance, not the sort of the stuff around the edges that we're hearing today.
Steve, we've got your point, and it's a strong one. Thank you very much for your call. I want to try and yes, is that Richard McBrien?
Yeah,
Father
may
McBrien,
I comment
please?
On that?
Yes.
Because I think this is extremely important, and it bears out what Steve was saying. Every 4 years, the administrative committee of the Bishops' Conference issues a statement on the issues that are facing the electorate in that coming presidential year.
Mm-hmm.
Ever since 1980, actually, they've been doing this. And this is the most recent statement of last October, 2003. And this statement has been in every one of the statements almost word for word since 1980. We do not wish to instruct persons on how they should vote by endorsing or opposing candidates. We hope that voters will examine the position of candidates on the full range of issues, as well as on their personal integrity, philosophy, and performance. We are convinced that a consistent ethic of life should be the moral framework from which to address issues in the political arena. That is saying that we are not a one-issue church. If some people think that the abortion issue is so overriding that it justifies their vote, fine, they follow their own conscience.
That's not what the bishops said.
But the official position of the bishops, and it's been restated every 4 years, including in the run-up to this campaign, is that Catholics should not vote on the basis of one issue, that they should take that the bishops themselves do not want to endorse or oppose candidates. Now, if they were to issue a statement, some sort of new statement on abortion, which is clearly intended to challenge Senator Kerry and those others in the Congress who vote in a similar fashion, it is inevitable that it will be interpreted as a statement against Senator Kerry and for the reelection of President Bush. That is a fact. You cannot ignore that reality. That's why no one is in any doubt what the Catholic Church teaches on abortion. Unfortunately, and here again, I think Father Newhouse was right at the beginning, it is a very delicate thing to make strong statements which can, during a presidential campaign, which can be interpreted by the general public as being an indirect endorsement of one of the candidates. And that's what the bishops want to avoid, and that's why I predict, perhaps not as strongly as I made the prediction on Arinze, I predict the bishops will issue no such national policy, certainly before the election.
Father Newhouse, we've just got a half a minute left. Do you think John Kerry will avoid that head-on confrontation?
No, I agree with Father McBrien that the bishops' conference will likely not take the kind of position that turns this into a partisan confrontation. What individual bishops do, the conference really doesn't have authority or control over what individual bishops do. What the conference has done, what the bishops collectively have done, and what the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, which is the highest teaching authority in the Curia in Rome, they have both made very clear, in the bishops, for example, that the seamless garment of life is not a bunch of equivalent issues. As they've said, the house of human dignity has as its foundation the protection of innocent human life.
This conversation will have to go on another evening, and I look forward to that. Father Richard John Newhouse, Father Richard McBrien, thanks for being with us tonight.
Glad to be with you.
Thank you.
And Jack Beattie, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.